his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Wednesday, 17th of December, it is. I am Bob McCowan, that is John Shannon, this is Primetime Sports. Later, Pat Gillick will join us, the senior advisor to the Phillies. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star and the Raptors, who play the Brookline Nets tonight for the first time since losing Game 7 in the first round of the playoffs
last year.
Not
really the same Nets, though, really, when you think about it.
I didn't say they were the same Nets.
No.
I just said they haven't played the Nets.
I know, but it's not the same.
Why are you arguing when I haven't made... I mean, you're arguing something I didn't even say.
No.
Are you just going to be this way today?
Yes. How are you feeling?
Feel a lot worse in the last 30 seconds than I did when I walked in.
Oh, that's hurtful, Bob. It's the Christmas season.
Why do you have an orange shirt on then? Exactly.
The only one that was clean.
Marty, okay. Marty Appel will join us. He's the former public relations director of the New York Yankees. Earlier this week, the trading card world lost the man who designed the modern baseball card. Cy Berger was 91 years old.
Was he Tops?
That's a good question. He was, I believe.
I think he was the one who put gum in the four-pack, too.
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Mm. And he was the one who put statistics on the back.
That would also make sense. John Morosi... formerly John Paul Morosi, occasionally J.P. Morosi. You can call me Ray or you can call me Jay, but it doesn't have to call me Johnson. Fox Sports will join us. Jim Houston of the National Hockey League. And Emily Kaplan, a writer and reporter with Monday Morning Quarterback.
Yeah, she's writing about Danny Watkins, who's a...
Canadian.
Kid out of Kelowna, a fireman out of Kelowna, B.C., beautiful part of the world. Hey, I saw you on Sunday night on television.
Sunday night. Oh, Sunday night hockey.
Yes, I saw you and Ron and Tara. That lovely spot about your winery. Wow.
It was quite brief. It was a long way to go for 2.5 minutes.
That's minutes longer than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I come on, I have people come on here and I give them 15, 20 minutes.
It's radio versus television.
No, this is also television. See? See that picture of me?
Yeah.
Television.
So you're suggesting you wanted more time?
Well, I'm just saying it was a brief period. It's 2.5 minutes.
As you well know on network television, 2.5 minutes can be an eternity.
This is also network
particularly
television.
Maybe for the viewer.
Well, we've just done 3.5 minutes and nothing has been said at all.
Eternity. I saw some nice pictures of the winery.
Well, they went on Friday and they shot the winery.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it is a beautiful place. Have you been? No.
No. Have I been invited?
I'm sure you've been invited.
I'm not sure.
I'm sure you've been invited.
I am not sure about that.
Well, John.
Yes.
Come on down.
Can't make it. Sorry.
It's all right. You're busy.
I might come down one day, Bob.
Oh, gee. I'll alert the media. Jim Houston of the NHL on Sportsnet will join us, and Emily Kaplan of Monday Morning Quarterback. Oh, I already mentioned them.
You already mentioned them because we talked about Danny Watkins from Kelowna, B.C.
Emily Kaplan will be on to talk about Danny Watkins of Kelowna, B.C.
Beautiful. I love it. Speaking of wine country, Kelowna, B.C.
Yeah, they're okay. I know this has now become kind of the topic. It's sort of been the topic for me all year. Well, it's been this periodically over the last 9 years, this topic has come up. Who are these Toronto Maple Leafs?
Wow, that's a great question, Bob. I've never heard that before.
I'm sure. And I don't, I, you know what? I'm inclined to say, you know, maybe there's something going on here. You know, this is not, you know, three or four games. This is now almost a month.
Mm-hmm. Well, since the 9-2 thrashing.
Well, when was that? What was the date of that one?
By the Predators.
I don't even
and
know
the
when that
6-2
was.
Thrashing by the Buffalo Sabres. And then the controversial non-stick waving at the end of the game. After the
which was just a bunch of silliness.
Which was the Tampa game, I believe, the Tampa on the Thursday night. So that was it was early November, wasn't it? Like November the 9th or something like that. They've won 6 in a row since then.
No, they won more than that.
Okay.
They won 6 in a row, but
6 that's what I said, 6. They've won 6 in a row.
Oh, I thought you meant 6 in a row since the 9-2 loss. No, they're 9, they're 10 1-1 or something.
Okay.
Since then, they played 12 games. November 18th.
Wow.
So it's a month tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the Nashville game.
Yes. And I think that if you look at it, it's the fact that they have 12 forwards that are actually working. It's not a situation where they have one line that's playing okay and then the rest are along for the ride. They have, you know, really have 3 and 4 lines that are contributing, and this line of Kadri, Santarelli, and Winnick has played a big role. Peter Holland, as a centerman's played a role. Obviously, Bozak, Kessel, and Van Riemsdyk have done okay. They're probably better on the power play than they are 5-on-5. And then, you know, top it off, they've had some pretty good goaltending. You know, Jonathan Bernier for the most part, but James Reimer twice in that period of time, he's been very good. And as you know, Bob, it all goes back to goaltending, doesn't it?
Well, but is it sustainable? I mean, is this actually a team that is evolving into a very good team?
No team scores more goals per game than the Toronto Maple Leafs in the National Hockey League. No team scores more per game right now than the Toronto Maple Leafs. So if you get goal scoring and goaltending, and I think that there's always been a question mark about how good this team is defensively in the first place with their 6 defensemen. They've done okay. And I think the verdict's still up because they've had a boatload of home games.
Mm-hmm.
They're going into their...
They're going to go on the road soon.
They have a 7-game road trip during the World Junior Hockey Championships.
Right.
And then the month of January, they might as well just leave the bags packed at the door because they're going to be on the road a lot. Before the All-Star break at the end of the month, this will be the test. But at the same time, when you looked at previous years, and they've had a front-loaded home schedule, they haven't been able to take advantage of it. Well, what they've done this year truly is take advantage of it,
right?
And I think that's a big part.
But what we saw with Vancouver had a similar kind of situation up until a few weeks ago when they came east,
yes,
and got whacked.
Yes.
Night
well,
after
they
night
went
3-3
three, three, and 1 on their 7-game trip. 3-3-1.
Well, but they're playing Eastern opponents,
mm-hmm,
who are supposed to be inferior to Western opponents, and they were, I don't know, a point behind Anaheim overall?
Yes.
At one point?
Yeah. Well,
just before the trip?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going on the road isn't always a good thing, as we all know.
No, Calgary, who we all
were
marveling at how great the Calgary Flames were playing, and they went on an Eastern swing, and really, in many ways, haven't recovered from it. When you consider they lost again to the Rangers last night at home, but the Maple Leafs are the hottest team in hockey right now, and it's and the other team that's playing pretty well at home again is Montreal. You know, just prior to, they went on a 4-game trip and they looked okay in Chicago, lost in the last minute. They looked awful in Dallas on a Saturday night, and they've come home and they've put things together as well. So there's lots of good stories about both Montreal and Toronto. And Montreal wins last night at home, and young Galchenyuk gets his first hat trick in the National Hockey League. So there's some positives, certainly. And it's funny, you know, you talked about East versus West, Bob. I haven't seen the statistics recently about the difference. The Western domination in the Western Conference and versus Eastern Conference, it used to be overwhelming.
Yeah, it's not nearly as much this year.
I don't think it is.
I think you're right.
And when you look at what the Rangers did, for the first time, Rangers have made 20 trips over the last 20 years, 20 trips that have included the same three teams on the road trip, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton. For the first time over that 20-year period or those 20 trips, the Rangers won all three. It's the first time. So that tells you that, and they're starting to click on all cylinders with Lundqvist and Rick Nash playing so well. Nash has now got an 11-game scoring streak. They're pretty impressive, too.
We'll talk more about it a little bit later on. I mentioned Doug Smith will join us later this hour. But first of all, here's the senior advisor to the Philadelphia Phillies, a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. You all right, Patrick?
I'm all right, Mr. McCowan. How are you? Happy holidays to you guys.
Happy holidays to you. How's the weather in the Pacific Northwest?
I'm in the lower East Coast right now.
Oh, are you?
I'm in Philadelphia at the moment.
Wanted to talk a little bit with you about the winter meetings and how things have changed in your, 40 years plus in the game. My recollection was of specifically of the, I go back to that, was it 78, 79, the winter meetings were in Toronto?
Right.
And, you know, we were sitting in the hotel lobby and all the people were there and everybody was chatting and people were in corners and sliding off into bars. General managers would go over and deals were being announced all the time. How and why has that changed, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of it's technology. And so a lot, you know, people not only in the sports field, but I think people in the business world and then just on your own social circle now, they're really communicating more, you know, by texting or email than they are really sometimes in verbal conversations, or as we're doing right now, sometimes over the telephone. So consequently, I think technology has had a lot to do with it, Bob.
Is that a good thing, Pat?
You know what? It's the same thing. Too much isn't too good, and I think that you have to really. Yeah, we have to have a little bit of everything. Just like you can't build a ball club just by draft choices, you have to have free agents and you have to have drafts and trades and things. It's the same thing, I think, about communication. I think you can't do it just you can do it with texting or with email, but I don't think it's particularly healthy. I like to see some verbal communication and like to see just exactly what people's eyes tell you, what their expression tells you, what their pauses in their voice tell you. So I think those are all important things when you're trying to make a deal or really inquire about a player. It's very easy to say yes or no on a text, but you can't get the feeling, the same feeling you do in a telephone or a one-on-one conversation in the lobby.
So I'm sure no two deals are constructed the same way, but in a general sense, give me an idea of how you go about a deal. Do you start before you pick up that phone and phoning the general manager of some other team? Do you know what you're going after, or are you just starting out with a general conversation and see where things go?
No, we know where we're headed. Because we go through all 29 clubs and we try to, through our scouting staff and their association with other scouts, with general managers, we got a wish list for all 29 clubs. And so consequently, what their needs are, what their excess is, what they might be able to move, we have all that down. And then it's pretty easy to go through and say, hey, we got a match here, we got a match there, we don't match here, we don't match there. And before you know it, just because the players that you have available or the players you're desiring to obtain in a trade, you probably have eliminated 20 clubs, and so probably you're down to what you want to say is 9 viable customers.
So strategically, Pat Gillick picks up the phone and calls XY general manager. Do you immediately ask about the guy you're interested in, or do you send the conversation in another direction and then bring it around?
Probably start in another direction and bring it around and see if he might approach the subject first. I like the other person if they can to bring up the particular player, or the particular situation we're interested in, and say, hey, well, that makes some sense. Why don't we get together and talk about it further? On the other hand, if you have a conversation and you don't think there's much meat to the conversation, then you might just dismiss it and move on to another club.
Pat, there's all the other thing I've noticed, and I spend more time in the hockey world and the other sports a bit more, basketball and football, but there always seems to be more transparency in baseball, about what potentially could happen. And why is that? Why do you think that is, if that is in fact true?
You know what? I think it's pretty true. And again, it gets back to people really, there's a lot of speculation going on out there. There's a lot of people that just throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. There's so much speculation. There's so much fantasy leagues. And the other thing is that when Bob started this conversation, there's no way you can control what goes on the internet. It used to be years ago that one of the things that newspaper people prided themselves in was accuracy. Mm-hmm. And that's gone completely by the wayside. So consequently, there's a lot of idle talk. A lot of people are talking when they shouldn't talk. And there's a lot more scrutiny, a lot more Twitter, a lot more Facebook, out there than there was, say, 30 years ago.
And how would you have managed it differently now? I mean, or can you manage it differently than you did when you were in that position in Toronto or Seattle or other places?
Well, you you have to give information and get information. So I always caution our people, give away information, that's not going to injure our position, and try to gain information that's going to help our position. So, they've got to be a little bit smart. They've got to have a little street sense, when they're talking to someone. They've got to read between the lines. But we just never tried to give up a lot of information, in the discussions that we had. We wanted, sometimes, most of the time you have a higher opinion of your own player than the other team. But
sure.
Sometimes you run into another club who has a higher opinion of your player than you do. So you don't want to kind of let the cat out of the bag. You kind of want to let them make that determination.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I always thought of you as a guy who likes to have his eyes on guys. You like to see players. I get the sense that today that's less of a factor for general managers. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. I think they let the numbers speak for themselves. In some ways, I think in the analytic world, and we have on board with the Phillies, we have three, we have a small staff. We have three analytic people on board that assist us, and we get information where other teams have got 10, 15, on board. And they just they don't want the numbers to be interfered with. So consequently, they might not want to see the player, because if they see the player, that player might do something that would cause their emotions to stray from the numbers.
Mm.
They want the numbers to stand alone and the numbers to speak for themselves. They don't want anything to interfere. So sometimes, as I say, the analysts let the numbers speak for themselves, and they prefer not to see the player.
Are you old school, or are you evolving?
Again, getting back to what I said, I think if you don't move on, you're going to be left behind. But again, I'm both. I think we need all the information we can possibly get, and I just view analytics as another piece of information, just as I view a scouting report from a scout as another piece of visual observation of the player. So why would I not use every tool that I had possible, be it analytics, be it a physical evaluation, be it a friend that knew the player, his high school coach. You need all that information.
Where does character rank on the list of criteria that you would use to evaluate a player?
Very high.
Why? We hear it a lot. I'm interested in why you think that's important.
First of all, these players together count in spring training, and if you go to the playoffs, they're together over 200 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, you walk into the workplace, which is the clubhouse, or you walk onto the field. I want our players wanting to come to the clubhouse, wanting to go onto the field. And if you have a situation that is an upheaval all the time, or you have some people that are pulling in the opposite direction from the other, say, 22, 23 players in the club. That's a distraction, and so consequently, you don't need that kind of distraction when you have that many number of games. So I want a happy place. I want a place that people want to go, to be on the field. I don't want some place where they show up and say, "Well, what are we going to expect today? Are we going to have a disagreement today? Are we going to have an argument today? Or what's this guy going to do today?" And again, I think you want people who are all, you know, have the same goal in mind. And I think it's very important that that character plays a big part in that.
I think it's fair to say that no deal you made was probably bigger than the Carter-Alomar deal. take us through, as best you can recall, the series of events or conversations that led ultimately to that transaction being completed. Do you remember how it started?
Yeah, it was. The funny thing was, we were after a free agent named Billy Dorn at the time, a second baseman, and we were also looking for a right-hand hitter, and so consequently, we had, you know, gotten Olerud, and so in a way, you could have DH'd Olerud and played McGriff at first and vice versa.
Yeah.
But we decided that we needed a right-hand hitter. So we knew that San Diego, they just made a change. Joe McElvain had just gone over from the Mets to become GM of the Padres. And then we also learned from some information that the manager with the Padres was not completely enamored by Alomar. And so initially when I had the conversation with Joe, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said, Joe, we're looking for a right-hand hitter. He said, would Carter be available? And he said, yeah, he'd be available if McGriff would be available. And I said, well, we could think about that. And I said, well, what if we wanted to expand this deal? And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, what are we going to add another player in the deal? And he said, well, who are you thinking about? And I says, Alomar. And he says, well, I would consider doing Alomar if it was Fernandez was in the deal. So I said, well, I don't know if I can do that. I said, you know, I have to think about it. And so went back to our people, Bob Maddock, Lamacchia, the right group that we had, and the guy that was our scout, Moose Johnson. He was our scout assigned to San Diego, and went back to him and ran through the scenario. And I said, you know, this thing just sets up better for us, you know, if we have Alomar at second, Joe Carter in the outfield, and Olerud at first. It just plays better for us. And so we went back the next day and had another meeting, and I tried to get a third player out of them, and I couldn't get a third player from San Diego. So we finally agreed to the deal. And in fact, I told Howard Starkman, usually they run off press releases what the trades are going to be. And I said to Howard, don't run off press release. And he said, well, why? And I said, I don't want this thing leaking out before we announce it. And I said, first of all, these are known players. We're not dealing minor leaguers for minor leaguers. We're dealing big leaguers for big leaguers. So all the writers know who Fernandez and Carter and Alomar and McGriff are. And so it went down pretty quickly. The interesting story, which is a true story, it was in Chicago, and so I was on the way out, and I called my wife from O'Hare, and I said, you know, we just made a deal. And she was driving on the Gardner at the time, and she says, well, what is it? I said, well, we just traded Freddie McGriff to San Diego, and McGriff was my wife's favorite player. And her comment was, you better get home before you screw up the club anymore.
Well, my recollection, correct me if I'm wrong here, Pat, and I might very well be, but my recollection was that there was some controversy, some significant controversy over the merits of this deal when it was made, because McGriff and Fernandez were extreme, not only good players,
popular.
They were very popular players in Toronto.
Yeah, but you know what? Again, it's the known against the unknown, and the other people, they've probably known Joe Carter some from his days in Cleveland.
Right.
But they didn't know Alomar, and now exactly. Alomar was sort of a an unknown situation. And as it turned out, probably the best all-around player in the deal probably was Alomar.
Without a doubt.
I would say without a doubt, yeah. Fascinating stuff, Patrick. It's good of you to take time for us today. Hope everything is well. And have yourself a happy holiday season, will you?
Well, happy holidays to you guys. Good to talk to you. And I hope that the Leafs win a few more games.
Yeah.
Flyers on Saturday, Pat. I know you're in Philadelphia, but it's the Leafs-Flyers Saturday. So.
Well, the Flyers aren't very good on the road. They're good at home, but they don't play well on the road. So, but anyway, good to talk to you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Pat. Pat Gillick. Hall of Famer, former vice president, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, now senior advisor to the Philadelphia Phillies.
And apparently a hockey scout.
And apparently a hockey scout, too. Well, it is what it is. The winter baseball meetings aren't what they used to be, although there was a little bit more traction this year in terms of trades.
Yeah, I just the fact that... And we touched on it a bit yesterday, too. But just the fact that for a period of time in the middle of December, when the NFL is big, the National Hockey League and the NBA are going full bore, people stop and talk baseball for 5 or 6 days. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said for that, Bob. There's something to be said. It's like when former owners of hockey teams in this town used to be able to grab a front page in July or August.
Yeah, there's something about baseball. I mean, the conversation really never stops in baseball. The season really doesn't ever end.
That's right.
It just kind of keeps going on. There's a brief period, maybe 3 weeks after the World Series, where you just kind of, you've had enough baseball, you've been going at it for 12 months, mm-hmm. and you kind of take a deep breath. But then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you're right back into the middle of it because free agents are being announced. And trades are starting to be made, and here come the winter baseball meetings, and we are,
less than 60 days from spring training.
Yeah.
From pitchers and catchers reporting.
Yeah. And you know yourself, a lot of guys, I mean, most of the players live in the South in the offseason, but a lot of guys, like Blue Jay players, will be in Dunedin right after the holidays.
Right.
Whether it might not be the first week of January, but by the third week of January, a lot of guys are there. Pitchers and catchers especially will be down there. If you go over to the minor league complex, you'll find them out there mm-hmm. at 10 o'clock in the morning playing catch and getting loose weeks before spring training. It's a never-ending process. We'll take the break. When we come back, we'll address the Toronto Raptors and the Brooklyn Nets, who confront each other for the first time since Game 7 last year. Tonight, we'll talk about it with Doug Smith of the Toronto Star when primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan.
Let's go!
Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Don't you love her badly? Don't you need her badly? Don't you love her ways? Tell me what you say.
Four minutes before the hour, primetime continuing on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Later, Marty Appel, former PR director of the New York Yankees, John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. But voiced from the pages of the Toronto Star, here is, ladies and gentlemen, Doug Smith. Greetings.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We're well.
Good.
When is the last time Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment had two franchises playing as well as these two? Simultaneously.
I'm 56 years old, so at least 57 years ago.
Well, they didn't have a basketball team back then, but you'd probably be right. Yeah. Never, I don't think. Eh? Really?
No, I don't. Well, there was one year the Leafs and Raptors are both in a playoff.
Yeah.
And, I think the Leafs might have gone, they play in Jersey, and they might have got the conference final.
Yeah, 2002, I think, Doug.
2002, yeah. But that's, what, 12 years ago?
And I think, if memory serves me, the Raptors lost in the first round to Detroit.
Yeah, that might have been 04. Okay. They were in 2002 with New York, and then beat them and played Philly, and then had a year to 03, probably. Crystal, like this time, 03.
What? There was... And for obvious reasons, when your best player, your star player, goes down with an injury and is going to be out for a while, it would be understandable to go, uh-oh. And yet, I never got, look, if I don't remember Vince Carter going down for an extended period of time, I'm sure it happened during his career, but if and when that happened, you know, a lot of people would say, oh God, they're in trouble now. I don't recall hearing that from Raptor people when DeRozan went down. Did you?
No, not at all, because I think they knew that they were not bulletproof, but they were deep enough to absorb 10 or 15 games. Probably not a full season or two-thirds of a season, but 10, 15, 20 games, that they're good enough and deep enough to absorb that. Plus, you look at the schedule, and it's been relatively easy still.
Yeah.
And they'll get them back when it gets hard after the trip out west. So... yeah, there wasn't that panic that they, you know, we got, mostly because this team's not built to have a best player. It's built to have a bunch of good players.
And
they were seeing that.
And quite frankly, what they've been able to do that other teams in this wearing the same jerseys over the years, they've beaten the bad teams badly. You know, and every once in a while, the Raptors in previous years would, you know, be 5-6 against teams again under 500. I think they're 11-1 right now.
Yeah, that, you know, you got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat, and then steal games against teams that you're equal with or a little bit below. And they've taken care of business. And that's a lot of what led to last year's success. They beat the team they should have beaten, and they're doing that. They've done that all this year, even without their leading scorer and the guy who can, in a close game, get to the free throw line and can sort of stop runs by getting a bucket or free foul shots whenever you need it.
You think Brian Colangelo's got a wry smile that Landry Fields is in the starting lineup?
I'm sure he does. And, you know, Fields is limited. Obviously, he can't shoot. He's not an offensive threat, but he's a smart player, and he's doing what they need him to do. And it's a great story. He's a good guy, and I'm glad he's having some success. But frankly, when DeRozan comes back, he goes back to being the 11th, 12th guy.
Mm-hmm.
Any chance he gets a trade as a result of his play over the next few weeks?
I don't think so, because his contract expires. I don't think the Raptors would deal him for somebody that has a year left on his contract next year, because they want that financial flexibility. And I don't see him as a kind of rental player that a marginal team would want to use for the last 20 games of the year.
So you don't see a desire on the part of anybody else, and you don't necessarily see the Raptors being interested in moving the asset?
No, I don't think they would... they might put them together with other assets to hit a home run, but I don't think that's in their plans at all. And as a guy, just to deal him, again, you know, you want his money in the summer rather than you want the guy that's going to cost you $6.5 million or $7 million next year.
Do you see a trade before this season is out?
I really don't. I think they'd rather wait. I don't think they want to trade a guy who's playing of the top 10, because then you're mixing the chemistry and you're sort of, you're subtracting to add. I think they'd rather wait till the summer and take their pick of the guy they want for a spot that they might have. You know, they've got a huge decision coming on Amir Johnson in July.
Well, I agree.
What they do with him, and that's going to be a tough one. But I think they would rather wait and add from a larger pool in the summer than take a shot at mixing with what's going really well right now.
Let's talk a little bit about these Brooklyn Nets. They're not exactly the same Brooklyn Nets that we last saw in Game 7 of the opening round last year. What are the differences?
Well, the biggest difference is they're a year older, and they might be the least athletic team in the history of professional basketball.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's a hugely bad thing, but they have no athletes. They're slow and old. And, you know, they might make the playoffs. They might sneak in at 7th, 8th spot, but... They got older. I think losing Paul Pierce was a big blow, because it took some leadership and the guy who could make a shot at the end of the game away from you. They're a mess, frankly, because they have pieces that nobody wants. and they're sort of locked into them, and they're not any younger or better. They were built to win last year.
Right.
And didn't.
And now what you've got is this beginning of the transition to whatever's next.
Yeah, but the transition is going to take some time because
sure.
you got to get a lot of young kids and then have to learn how to win.
Yeah, but that's I would assume that we're going to see a bit more of Lionel Hollins' imprint on this team next year rather than this, correct?
Yeah, and you're going to see, Billy King, the GM, make some moves in the summer to get younger and then suck it up for a year and see where they go. But right now, they're slow, unathletic. They're veterans, so they're going to win some games on their smarts. But when push comes to shove, they're going to get beat up a lot because they're going to get run out of a lot of gyms.
A year ago, these two teams were, statistically virtually identical. In 11 meetings, the combined aggregate score, well, that's a double, a double positive. The aggregate score was 1,070 to 1,070.
Yeah.
The exact same number of points in the 11 games played between them. It is pretty amazing, isn't it? But I gather you don't think that we're, in the beginning of this series of games this year, that these two teams are even remotely close to each other anymore?
No, I think the Raptors are light years ahead. I think they're younger, quicker. They've got that experience from the playoffs last year. And the Nets are older and not quite as good and have no young kids to be that next wave. They're going entirely opposite directions right now.
What would you, speaking of, you mentioned Amir Johnson, and I wanted to ask you this question. Can you make a decision on what you want to do with him? Do you want to re-sign him? Do you want to bring him back?
I can't make that decision right now because you don't know how he's going to play the last 50 or 65 games of the year, whether he's heard 60 games, whether he's going to get hurt again. I don't know what the market's going to be for him, and that's going to be a big factor because I'm not sure teams – are you going to load up on Amir Johnson as a free agent? Are you going to give him a three-year deal at – $17 million with the third year not guaranteed. Maybe you make that offer. I would be shocked if the start of next season Amir Johnson was a starting power forward for the Raptors. I think I would bring him back at the right number as a bench guy, and I think they should. I think he's got a lot of skills in 20 minutes a night rather than 29.
Right.
Or 18 rather than 29. But it's going to be a cost thing. Like, you pay him, the league average is probably, the mid-level exception is probably going to be about $6 million. So do you give him $18 million over 3 years with that third year not fully guaranteed? I can live with that. But I would like to upgrade that starting spot.
Well, I was going to say, that starting spot upgrade is somebody that they already have, or they're going to have to go out and find
him? I think they're going to have to go out and find him. I don't know who it's going to be. Because there's a lot of stuff going to happen, I think, in January, February trades, whether guys stay with teams they're with. But I think there's an upgrade to be had at that spot. And it's going to be a huge and tough decision for Masai. It'll be the first really, really, really hard one he's had, whether you keep a guy who's been so serviceable and so good and it means so much to the franchise, but you know that his role has to diminish if you're going to keep going forward.
Have they got Terrence Ross under contract for one more year after this?
Yeah, but for him and Jonas, it's both they can re-up them in the summer. Those are going to be two more difficult calls, but not, like, you can let it go. They're not hugely necessary to do extensions for them before next Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
But you got, if you want to do it, you have the opportunity to do it this summer.
And
I don't know what you do with those two either.
No, I'm trying to think about it. Well, one of the things and that's why I ask you about the chances of them making a move, because they have these movable or moving parts potentially at the end of the season. Well, in Amir, it's not even a potential. It is a moving part. He's going to do something. And I wonder whether Masai gets ahead of those situations. And can you get ahead of the situation if you continue to play the way you are? If you demonstrate that you might be able to get to an NBA final?
Yeah, that's the big question. Is this the magical year where the one piece wins you the Eastern Conference and you've got pieces you can deal to get it? Everything that Masai's ever done has been with patience. which leads me to think he's going to let this play out, do what he has to do in the summer rather than try to hit a home run in February. Because one thing that makes this team different from a lot of the other ones in the Eastern Conference is the way the 10 guys work together.
Mm-hmm.
And if you disrupt that, you're not sure. You're
guessing. You don't know what you got anymore.
You're guessing, like you were guessing last year when you traded Rudy Gay.
Yep.
You didn't know. And maybe you do it again, or maybe you don't.
Well, but the team was like 6-12 at the time, right?
Yeah. It wasn't winning 67% of its games.
Right.
For sure. And I think they're good enough to challenge the Eastern Conference right now. I'm not sure they need to hit that home run.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know who might be out there and who might be available. But
yeah, we got 2 months. You got all of December and January and February to figure it out. So
right.
You don't know. But everything that Masai's ever done has taken time. He's been rather patient with it. Any kind of significant move, he waited on Gay for 15 or 18 games.
Yep.
He got Lowry done quick. He sort of waited around and picked Lou Williams up and then did James Johnson. His time in Denver, the Carmelo stuff dragged out forever.
Yeah.
Nothing but suggest that he's the kind of guy, he says, I'm going to seize this immediate moment on the off chance that it works.
Yeah. We'd be remiss in not mentioning this is the 10th anniversary of the Carter trade.
We're going to have a moment of silence tonight, I think.
Well, you have one, okay? Because I think the rest of the people will be making a lot of noise.
It's 10 years. I was talking to Ed Stefanski, who was the GM of New Jersey at the time,
yep.
And then came to work for the Raptors. I wish them happy anniversary. And he thought, it's one of the best days of my life.
Yeah, it was. And one of the worst days for Raptor fans. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Enjoy the game tonight. And we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
The Toronto Raptors against the Brooklyn Nets tonight.
Mm-hmm.
First time since Game 7 last year. That's Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. Some utterly unsurprising news out of Calgary today. The Flames announcing they have signed head coach Bob Hartley to a multi-year contract extension. The only interesting thing about it is the Flames have played crappy the last couple of weeks. Yeah,
5 games in a row. But at the same time, this team has overachieved in Bob Hartley's time there. And now that Brad Treliving, the new general manager, and Hartley have had an opportunity to work together for 2.5 months, this was a logical thing. This was inevitable to happen. And it was a decision I think both had to make. I mean, Hartley had proved again that he was a National Hockey League coach. And he could have been a free agent next July. And Treliving, as a new general manager, had to feel comfortable with his coach. And quite frankly, in talking to both of them, I'm sure they told each other this, they wanted to get a deal done. They wanted to get something that put it all to bed and cemented some future for this management team, this coaching staff in Calgary over the next few years.
3 weeks ago, if I asked you, would you rather have the Toronto Maple Leafs roster or the Calgary Flames roster, would you have taken Calgary? Maybe.
Wow. No.
Maybe.
I don't know. That's there.
Today you won't. But
no, today I won't. But at the same time, there are great moving parts on both. You know, when you look at that defensive pair of Brody and Giordano, when you look at what the Flame goaltending has done up until recently.
Well, how about this, John? How about if I say 3 years from now, I like the Flames more than I like the Leafs?
I can believe that. I can believe, Bob, I can believe that.
Yeah.
I really can, because they still have some young guys that are in the system, as the Leafs have, but I can believe what you're talking about there.
We got to get out of here. Thank you very much for stopping by, as always.
Anytime.
And I'm sorry that you didn't have any other clean shirts. Marty Appel, the former PR director of the New York Yankees, will join us.
This shirt.
Beautiful. Halloween, it's nice. John Paul Morosi, John Morosi, J.P. Morosi, one of the above will join us. And Jim Houston and Emily Kaplan of Monday Morning Quarterback in the final hour of the show. Ken Reed will wander in here, and Primetime Sports will continue. You're listening or watching, presumably a little of both, on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.